Welcome back, everybody. This is Arthur Staple. You're listening to No Sleep Till Belmont, the Islanders podcast from The Athletic. We're going to have Scott Gordon joining us in a little bit. But first, we got some news at The Athletic pertaining to our coverage of the Islanders, and we wanted to make sure we fully introduced the new main Islanders beat writer, and that's Kevin Kurz. Kevin, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Arthur. How are you?
Doing great. Very excited to have you come back east and join the tri-state coverage crew. We've obviously got Shayna Goldman jumping in to do Devils in addition to her Rangers work. I'll be doing mostly Rangers and a little bit of some other stuff as need be. And Kevin's coming close to home to do the Islanders. He's been in San Jose for a decade, the last few years for us at The Athletic covering the Sharks. And there's some similarities between these two teams and their fan bases, I would say. And in your time covering San Jose, have you kind of started to understand the small market passionate fan as well as you have out there, and that how that's going to be pretty similar coming here?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, that's why I like working at The Athletic, frankly, because those are our fans, right? Those are our subscribers, the diehards who you know, appreciate the in-depth deep dives into certain topics. And it's the same in San Jose, and it's a tough time for the franchise right now. But, you know, when I got here, it was, they were coming off back-to-back appearances and losses in the conference final. So that's, you know, a little bit of a similarity right there, just in terms of team performance. But yeah, you know, I always think the fans here in San Jose, you know, San Francisco is an hour away. But right when I got here was when the Golden State Warriors pretty much started to become one of the greatest teams of all time, right? And it seems like they've regained that title. Yes. This season with the way they're going. And, you know, that started to overshadow the Sharks a little bit. The 49ers made a couple of Super Bowls. The Giants won 3 World Series. So I think in some ways the overall fan base has diminished a little bit over the years, and there are some crowds here that they've been the smallest crowds in the time I've been here, but that diehard fan has certainly remained. And, you know, because of that, you know, I think there's always going to be a hockey market here. And, you know, maybe not, it's not as big as the team would like right now, but, you know, once they start winning again, which might take a couple of years, I have no doubt they're going to come back. And, you know, they're also in the oldest building, and I've always gotten the sense, you know, especially the last couple of years, I've been to Barclays Center. I saw some games there, and I think I do realize, maybe not as much as some people on the East, that the Islanders needed a new building, and that should probably rejuvenate everyone associated with the team. If I'm reading that right.
Normally, yes, the way that this season has gone, maybe a little bit, it's a little bit delayed, but definitely so. And the one main connection, I think, besides now yourself, in the last decade or so between the Sharks and the Islanders is the legendary Evgeny Nabokov, who's now the goalie coach with the mm-hmm. Sharks. I just saw him at Madison Square Garden the other day. His Islanders time was brief but legendary. Do you have any Nabby stories, or did you kind of come along a little too late to really get the full Nabby show in San Jose?
Yeah, I was a little late to that. But, you know, I did get the sense right away that he's one of the most popular players here. Even though I never saw him play in person for the Sharks while I was covering the team, he stuck around as the goalie coach. And he's always so great to talk to for any stories I'm doing. And it's one of those where I think sometimes the team is a little reluctant to make him available to reporters. They're a little worried that he might be too honest.
Yes.
Royce Sommer is the same way, the longtime AHL coach who's been doing this forever. Those are two of my favorite people to talk to in this organization. But Nabby is still beloved here. I want to say not too long ago, I forget the circumstances, but he was recognized on the Jumbotron. It might have been opening night. And he got, oh, you know, it was opening night when they do the player introductions. He's the goalie coach. And he still gets an ovation as loud as some of the players, as guys like Brent Burns and Thomas Hertl. So he does love this town. I doubt he's ever paid for any drinks in the last few years. And yeah, he's a pleasure to talk to just because he's got such a great personality.
Now, not necessarily relevant for Islander fans, even though there's a lot of them that would like Lou Lamoriello to make a trade, any trade at all. A lot of your most interesting stuff lately, for better or for worse, has been about the Evander Kane saga, and saga feels like the right word to sum up. Yeah. You could probably put a whole book together with all the stories that you've done on him. what is the situation with Evander Kane, and do you feel like there can be a chance for him to fit somewhere else? I mean, the Islanders are desperate right now. I don't know if they're desperate enough for Evander Kane, but you're the guy that's closest to that situation. What do you make of all that, and where do you see him fitting in anywhere, if anywhere else?
I have a hard time knowing what I know about Lou. I have a hard time seeing Lou Lamoriello and Evander Kane coexisting. Now, of course, stranger things have happened. And, you know, it only takes one team to want Evander Kane. And, you know, as it's been pointed out, the Sharks can retain half of his salary in the deal, and that team could retain half of that leftover salary. So, you know, maybe there's a team that takes a chance. But the biggest hurdle that is going to have to be cleared for any deal is that Kane has three, or maybe the biggest obstacle, I guess I should say, to any deal is that Kane has 3 years left on his contract after this one at $7 million annually. So while I think the Sharks would eat that I think they'd be happy to avoid a buyout just to save them the long-term cap penalty, I think they would eat the half of the remaining salary on the contract. But does another team want to take on a player that has essentially worn out his welcome everywhere he's been? And that's 100% what has happened here in San Jose. You know, as I reported over the summer, though, he alienated himself from a lot of the players in the dressing room, not just last year, but just with some of the things he's done the last couple of years. And, you know, it's the team's fault too, I think, for not, disciplining him at all or sitting him or anything like that. But they're in a position now where the team itself keeps talking about how good the vibe in the room is, how the chemistry is great. They have a lot of cohesion, you know, all those buzzwords that teams talk about needing to have in a dressing room, playing for one another, you know, all those. I'm a big believer in all those things. And they don't want Evander Kane back in the room. As someone told me who has knowledge of what goes on in that dressing room, you know, some of those team leaders, they do not want him back on a day-to-day basis. So I think that's fairly obvious in the last few days where we've talked to management, Bob Bugner, and everybody associated. You know, he's going to play on the Barracuda, the AHL team. And I don't think there's a path for him to return to the Sharks. Now, we'll see if a team bites. Again, it only takes one team. Maybe someone gets hurt. Maybe teams get a little more desperate headed up to the trade deadline, towards the trade deadline. But for now, he's going to practice and play with the AHL team. And again, I don't see him playing for the Sharks this season or frankly ever again.
Yeah, it's a crazy situation. And unfortunately, to segue into what we normally talk about here, you're not exactly coming into the prime of the Islanders, which is probably the most shocking thing, I'm sure, for you when you were planning or thinking about this move, when all of our internal shifting happened within the last couple months. What do you make of the Islanders? And I'm sure you did watch the game with the Sharks the other night, the 2-1 San Jose OT win at UBS Arena. When you watch the Islanders play, and the Islanders haven't really intersected with the Western Conference for a couple of years now, but when you see them play now, what comes to your mind? And from talking, talking to the guys on the Sharks about, you know, maybe the shock level of seeing a Barry Trotz team that's been so successful just struggling so much.
Yeah, I always thought they were a team that obviously they relied so much on their defense core and shutting other teams down and good goaltending. And I can see why some injuries to the key defensemen especially have affected them. I always feel like that's obviously the one position where if you start losing guys, it's really hard to make up. You know, if the defensemen are having trouble moving the puck out of the ice, breaking it out of their own zone, defending hard, and then getting to the forwards are useless, right? So I feel, you know, watching them, and again, I haven't even seen them in person yet, but I can see how missing some of those key defensemen that have been maybe underrated throughout their careers and lately, you take some of those guys out of the lineup, it affects everything. And I've seen it happen with the Sharks. You know, a couple of years ago, Mark Edward Vlasic, who I think, at one point was one of the best defensive defensemen in the NHL. They took him out of the lineup during that reverse sweep against the LA Kings, and it screwed up everything. They weren't getting the defensive zone stops they needed. They weren't breaking out as well. They, it affects everything all over the ice. So it seems to me that's the biggest problem with the Islanders. You know, they might not have any of the high powered scoring forwards other than Barzal. But, you know, when you lose a couple defensemen on a team like that, they're really going to struggle.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you funny you mentioned Vlasic. I think I had written earlier in the season when things hadn't gone off the rails yet that Adam Pellick is kind of, you know, especially when it comes to Team Canada and their Olympic considerations, they are going to the Olympics, kind of Adam Pellick is really the 2022 Canadian Olympic version of Mark Edward Vlasic from 2014, a guy that you might not have normally pictured to be among the elite level Canadian defenseman, but has a real role, and we'll see where all that goes. But yeah, it's an interesting parallel. And
Give me a story idea. I appreciate that.
Perfect. That's what I'm here for.
I need them. Yeah, we're gonna need them.
And lastly, we're always on Twitter way too much, I'm sure, for our own good. You have probably gotten a little bit of a taste since your announcement of the passion of Islander fans. And it's on Twitter. It's in our comment section. It can sometimes spill over into a little bit of anger, and it's certainly the frustration makes a lot of sense right now. But you are a Philly guy, which means I assume you have a very thick skin when it comes to this sort of thing. What's been your interaction so far with any Islanders fans, and you know, how do you feel like that relationship is going to grow? Because it is a small and fierce fan base, and maybe there are some parallels to the Sharks fan base as well there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great so far. I'm not going to say that I sit through and pour through all the at replies anymore, like maybe I used to 5 and 6 years ago. I don't think that's ever helpful for a whole number of reasons. But honestly, it's been great so far. I feel like the comments have been 95% positive. Obviously, I expect that to continue, right?
definitely.
Yeah. But you know, when I see the response, I think I went up something like 3,000 Twitter followers. So that was a little bit unexpected. So they all jumped on board. But you know, I'm excited to move back into, and I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way to any Sharks fans that are listening, but hockey just feels more important in the East Coast, right? And in the Northeast, and particularly in Philadelphia, where I grew up, and in New York. You know, I took tons of trips when I worked for the Flyers to Nassau Coliseum, to Madison Square Garden, and obviously all those other arenas, Boston, Montreal, Toronto. So that's what I'm excited about, to get back into a place where hockey really is, you know, the fans are passionate. There's more of them. And like I said, it just feels like it's a little bit more important, where, you know, as out here, it's hockey does still sort of have that niche feel, where it's never going to be as popular as basketball or football. Right. But, you know, I do feel like it hockey still just resonates a little bit more with the everyday fan, the everyday sports fan in an East Coast market than it does on the West Coast.
Well, that attitude will serve you well here, because like I said, this is a small group, but they care maybe more than any other fan base around the league. So it's going to be fun. Kevin Kurz, we're excited to have you come East and join the crew here. And Islander fans, make sure you do follow him on Twitter. Wait until he posts a few stories and see if the Islanders maybe win a game or two before he finally gets settled, and maybe things will be a little bit more enjoyable. But thanks for joining us, Kevin, and obviously we're going to talk again soon.
Yeah, I can't wait to get out there, Arthur. I'll see you soon.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks to Kevin Kurz, our new Islanders beat writer at The Athletic, for jumping on and talking a little bit about his transition from San Jose to Long Island. And now, bringing back from a successful debut as our guest co-host last week, it's former Islanders coach, longtime AHL coach, Scott Gordon. Scott, welcome back.
Successful. That can only mean the ratings are up.
Very successful. People loved it. Less excited, I think, in the Islanders' world is the results of the last few games. They're getting points now. They ended the regulation losing streak at 8, but the overall losing streak is at 11 now after a couple of OT losses, one to San Jose at home, one in Detroit, shootout loss to Chicago. Before we get into the specifics of how they're playing now that they've got at least some of their regulars back, when you do get guys back from this sort of situation, or whether it's injury or COVID, whatever position the Islanders have been in, and you're losing, how do you as a coach kind of manage expectations where guys clearly want to feel like they want to win a game and have it count as 10 points so that they can get themselves back on track? And with, you know, when you try to do too much, as we've talked about, you end up doing quite little.
Yeah, I think it's human nature to want to set the world on fire after you come back from an injury, you've been out of the lineup for an extended period of time, and just like you said, you try to do too much, and the bottom line is you have to play the right way. You can't cheat the game. You can't try to find shortcuts to give yourself opportunities, because ultimately you'll end up playing more in the defensive zone than you do in the offensive zone. So, all these guys that are coming back. The one good thing is they're not coming. Well, I don't know what the specifics of the injuries, but I know there's been a few guys that have had COVID, and even though that's tough on the lungs, at least physically they should be good as far as not having to deal with something that's nagging, whether it be a soft tissue injury or broken bones or whatever it might be, concussion. So hopefully I tell you, the first three games I watched before we spoke the first time, it was a different team in the San Jose and the Chicago game. I didn't see the Detroit game, but I think the guys that came back in the lineup, I thought there was a huge difference, and they just looked like a more confident team. Now, they didn't get the wins, but I think just the confidence of having the closer to a full lineup, the presence of those players that were out had an impact on their game.
The one thing I think I'm sure you saw and I saw and everybody saw is that they are generating a lot more scoring chances, whether that's just the flow up the ice is better because they have guys like Pelech back who can at least put the guys in the right spots defensively, maybe limit some of the more inexperienced guys being in the situations you don't want them in. Or, they've got Anders Lee back, Josh Bailey, Matthew Barzal seems to have, be a little bit more comfortable with his regular line mates. They're generating a ton and just not scoring. Those are stretches that every team goes through. It just seems like the worst time for these guys to possibly go through it, especially that San Jose game where Barzal scores whatever it is a minute in with a great shot, and you feel like, okay, the dam is broken, and then they just didn't push through again the rest of the night. How do you... The coach in you, I'm sure, and most coaches would say, like, as long as we're generating enough, we'll be fine. But we'll be fine only goes so far when you've lost that many in a row, I would think.
Well, I it's funny you mentioned that, because I think that might have been the first time that I saw a breakout pass from the D that didn't go up just up the strong side boards, whether it's a D to D or straight up from the corner up to the winger. And who's making that play? It's a guy that's got, 10, 12, 15 years of experience that had enough patience to hold on to that puck and be able to find Barzal in space and be able to make that play basically through two defenders. Mm-hmm. And to me, if you're Barzal, he's probably saying, boy, it's nice to get a pass like that and be able to skate with the puck through the neutral zone and not have any back pressure and have some ice in front of himself and to be able to have the time and space to be able to get that shot off. And more importantly, the whole thing that we talked about it last week, there was, to me, there wasn't a lot of cohesiveness as a unit of five coming out of their zone. A lot of the part of it was the pressure that was being put on them. But there was just a lot of chipping it out and having to make line changes. You get into that three-quarter game from a defensive side and not being able to get that three-quarter ice game from an offensive standpoint. That was, to me, when they scored that goal, they had multiple forechecks in that game that led to sustained ozone time. And all of a sudden, it was the the switch was flipped, and now you've got the Islanders playing, you know, from their blue line into the offensive zone for the majority of that first period. And I think a lot of that ties into the experience on defense with the guys returning, a couple of forwards being back, a little more poise with the puck. You know, a lot of first-year players, you know, sometimes it's just survival, making sure that they don't make the mistake that is going to cause a team to lose a game. And now you've got, I think, more plays being made where guys are trying to win games. And, you know, when that carries over throughout the game, I thought that the Islanders outplayed San Jose. I don't know what the shots were, but just from time of possession and offensive zone time, I thought it was really encouraging. And then, you know, watching the last game, there's no question that they were the better team. I was really impressed with what they were doing in the offensive zone, the people getting to the net, shots that were being taken, sustained pressure. And again, that all stemmed from the fact of being able to establish their forecheck, not with just one or two guys getting in off a dump, but basically having five guys get up into the play, defensemen being part of the attack coming out of their zone. And as a result, I didn't have them giving up a whole lot of chances 5-on-5 inside their zone. Their best chances came off of the rush. And, you know, the one goal was basically a 2-against-4 that was a result of some loose gap coming into the zone. They were able to make a shot. But I thought even when they did have some chances off the rush, they were had great back pressure, and the gaps overall were pretty good. And for me, I thought it was really encouraging. And most importantly, you know, the power play. Last two games, what are they, 3-for-7? A lot of ozone time. Their entries coming into the zone through the middle of the ice instead of, you know, just getting up to the red line and being squeezed off towards the boards and having to dump the puck in. Now you're looking at possession entries. You're seeing more setups. Wallstrom, I don't know how many shots he had in that shot attempts anyway against Chicago, but they're getting those shots. They're getting pucks to the net, people to the net, recoveries, resetting up after shots. So I think is going to have a huge impact, especially with the forwards, because now all of a sudden they're getting their touches in the fields and getting some points in the power play. It's going to build some confidence, and hopefully that carries over into their 5-on-5 play.
We're with Scott Gordon talking about some encouraging signs in the Islanders' last three games. And maybe the most encouraging sign, as we're talking about the defense, is what Noah Dobson's done in the last two games, and especially in the Chicago game. He obviously had the goal in the closing seconds to tie it. But when you see a young guy like that, and, you know, he struggled a bit, I think, when a lot of the regulars were out, he was asked to do a lot. And that's a big change for a 21, 22-year-old defenseman. But it did seem like something went off in him this weekend, and especially in that Chicago game where Barry Trotz kept running him out there, and he was making plays with the puck in his own zone, in the offensive zone, culminated with the huge tying goal to get them at least a point. When you see a young guy kind of have that light bulb moment, you know, do you kind of say like, okay, that's one, we need to see more? Or do you say like, this is a guy who, you know, he's a high pick, maybe this is the start of something big?
Well, you know, you don't know the impact it had. I don't know what he played for minutes when all the defensemen were out with the injuries and COVID. But, you know, maybe somewhere along the way, there's a little more confidence being built up behind the scenes that, you know, you might not necessarily see it in the games. But, you know, now that there's a full lineup or closer to a full lineup for the Islanders, now all of a sudden all that extra ice time and more opportunities with the puck is starting to, you know, build up his game. You know, that play he made in the second period against Chicago where he basically just went around two people and carried across the blue line. And, that's something that you'd see out of a 10-year veteran that, you know, might be going to the Hall of Fame. He was just really real poised and calculated. And, you know, I think, like you said, you know, over time here, he's probably starting to build up more confidence with the coach and getting more ice time. And now that there's a stronger lineup, there's more things that he can do with the puck and getting the puck to people and know that maybe, you know, hey, if there's a breakdown, you know, somebody will have my back. You know, whereas before there might've been a little bit of, you know, if I make a mistake here, you know, that it's more expected of me, and I can't do that. So I think both things go hand in hand as far as getting that offensive time and, you know, getting more minutes. And now that, you know, the team is getting stronger, you know, that should be some good times for him.
You know, he's had a couple of good games, so hopefully he's on the rise. I'm curious to know how you view guys like, in particular, Anthony Beauvillier and Kyle Palmieri, who played the whole way through, did not go on COVID, were not injured, but struggled pretty mightily to score goals. And I think, you know, they mostly played on a line together all the way through this last stretch. Palmieri stuck on one goal. I think Beauvillier has no goals in maybe 10 or 11 games. When you've got guys that have experience that are going through maybe some low confidence moments, you know, do you as a coach, do you have to kind of remind yourself this isn't just about coaching up the young guys and saying they'll get through it? You have to, you know, you have guys that have these moments, whether they're 25 or 30, or they've got 10 years in the game or 10 games in the NHL. Is it kind of a constant rotation of, oh yeah, I have to remember about my veterans too, because some of them just can't work themselves through it. And the confidence thing, it can be an issue for anybody.
It's funny you mentioned Beauvillier. He's the one guy, like, I didn't really know him a lot. I saw him play in the playoffs against the Flyers and I was impressed, but, and I don't know if it's because of more opportunity with the guys being out and him being one of the more experienced forwards, but I've been impressed with him. And the thing that, the biggest takeaway for me with his game is, like, he doesn't cheat. He, you know, he might not be getting points, but I thought he's done a great job as far as being strong defensively, making good decisions. You know, when he has made a mistake, but turned the puck over, the effort's there to get back and make a difference at the other end of the ice. And really, that's what you want from those players that are your veteran guys, and you know, that they don't, you know, try to cut corners to get their offense, because eventually it comes back. And like I said, you know, these forwards now are going to get better passes from their defensemen, just from the experience and the poise of the veteran guys. And, you know, also with the depth of the forwards being stronger now, you know, I'm beating a dead horse here, but it does have an impact on, you know, being able to get points. And, you know, the power play struggling as it was, you know, for so long, a lot of those guys, they get by with those bad stretches with their power play points, and they weren't getting them for a while there. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many games it was in that streak, but, you know, they scored 2-0, 1-1, 2-0, 1-0. That's a lot of games to not score. And you know, if you're going that many games, you know, with a struggling power play on top of that, you know, you're going to have those stretches where you're not going to get your goals 5-on-5. You want those power play opportunities just to kind of feed the confidence and of your forwards, and, you know, just to keep them going. So, you know, yeah, as long as they're, to me, if they're doing what they're supposed to be doing at both ends of the ice, that's an encouraging sign.
And lastly, non-Islanders topic, but relevant to you as someone who coached not only at the AHL level, but at the NHL level in the Philadelphia organization, Alain Vigneault, Michel Therrien fired. They come back out with Mike Yeo last night and lose 7-5. I think it's 7 goals in back-to-back games that they've given up. There's a lot of guys in that room that you coached. Is there any surprise that these, you know, especially after Vigneault's first year where they came within a game of the conference final in the bubble, and to now, just a couple of years later, he's fired. The team seems to be headed in the wrong direction. You know, what's your view on that situation as it's all kind of imploded this week?
Yeah, I look back in my time with the Islanders and the stretch before I got fired. I think as a coach, sometimes you know, when things aren't going well, and I thought our team had played pretty well the last 3 out of 4 games that we played. I think we gave up 3 or 4 goals and we just couldn't score. And I was encouraged by that. But I think the hard part about the Flyers with the expectations, having been there, there's some pretty good talent there that there's an expectation that, you know, they're going to push for a Stanley Cup and, you know, ideally win one. you know, they went out and got AV and, you know, a pretty experienced coaching staff. They try to go with some lineup tweaks for the first 2 years that AV was there. And then they, you know, obviously made some changes in the summer. And, you know, really, I don't think they had the opportunity to get a full look at what their changes were going to bring. But I think the, you know, probably the biggest takeaway is the, you know, there, it was just a struggle in all areas, whether it was power play, 5-on-5 scoring, goaltending for a while was really strong. And, you know, maybe the last few games hasn't been as strong. You know, they spent a lot of time in their D zone, and, you know, just reading the comments from Chuck Fletcher, you know, these are the areas that they had to get better in, and they, you know, just seem to be snowballing. And, you know, I think you never want to see somebody lose their job, but, you know, it was probably one of those things where as a coach, you know, you're hoping things are going to turn around soon. And they just never really did, particularly over the last 12 game stretch.
Well, tough situation for them, tough situation for the Islanders, but clearly some things are starting to turn around. And maybe by the time we're talking again next week, the Islanders have played a few more games. We'll actually talk about a win or two, a very rare occurrence these days with the Islanders. So
I think that's a pretty good comparison, though, like where the teams are at. And, you know, like it, I mean, who's to say if the last three games the Flyers had gotten a point and had been showing signs of, you know, getting their offensive game back, you know, whether it was time of possession, shots, power play trending in a positive direction, you know, both special teams. And, you know, that's, you know, kind of a tale of two different teams, you know, like you got to look at the Islanders and say, you know, this looks like we could potentially be turning the corner here. And, whereas the Flyers, it was a little bit different situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, Scott Gordon. Great stuff. We'll be back again next week with you with some more Islanders insights and whatever else comes up around the league, which seems to be something that happens on a daily basis. So thanks as always, Scott.
All right. Thanks, Arthur.
Yep. And thanks for everyone for listening to No Sleep Till Belmont. You can follow us on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and review. If you're enjoying the show, that really helps us out. You can subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial, then just 99 cents a month after that. And right now, annual subscriptions to The Athletic are just $3.99 a month. When you visit theathletic.com/nosleeptillbelmont, thanks to Kevin Kurz, Scott Gordon. We'll be back. More Isles talk next week. Thanks, everybody.